Well, on this election day here on the Mitch Albom program all across the United States, mm-hmm. we're very honored to welcome former President of the United States, Bill Clinton. Mm-hmm. President Clinton, nice to have you with us.
Oh, thanks, Mitch. How are you?
I'm just fine. It's not often that, you know, you go to Bill from New York and it's Bill Clinton on the radio talk show line, you know? Glad to have you with us. How are you finding, you know, when I talk to athletes who get out of the the game and then the Super Bowl comes around or something, they say, boy, I wish I was still back in it. So when Election Day comes around for a lifetime politician, is there a sense of nostalgia? Do you wish that you were running for something?
Well, I feel nostalgic, but I don't really wish I were running for anything. I miss the work of being president and the people with whom I worked. I miss that job, you know. But I'm happy now in election season to help others. That's what I've tried to do this time, and it's been a grand experience. We've got a lot of wonderful candidates out there, and I did my best to help raise them some money and go around and campaign for the ones where I thought I could be of some help to them, and that's enough for me. One politician in my family is enough, and I'm very proud of what Hillary's doing in the Senate in New York, and I don't really miss not being a candidate, but I miss the work that I did, yeah. And I'm trying to create a foundation where I can do public work and feel like I'm doing some public service, because that's really the thing that made me happiest in my life.
Is it true that what they suggest that once you've been president of the United States that pretty much everything kind of feels like a letdown? It just doesn't seem that important anymore?
No, I don't agree with that. I mean, I must say I have enjoyed my life a lot since I got out of the White House. I've just tried to find different things I could do that build on my experience and my contacts, but, you know, are different. For example, after September 11th, Senator Dole and I got together. In 11 months, we raised $105 million to guarantee college scholarships for the children and spouses of all the people killed or disabled on September the 11th. That's something I wouldn't have had time to do if I'd been president.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a foundation that works in India, and I do work in Africa on AIDS and economic development. I've been to Colombia to try to help them deal with the problems they've got with the narco traffickers and the drug lords. Just go up here, guys. So it's really going, for me, all this stuff is very rewarding, and I've enjoyed it very much.
You're not directing the driver as you're speaking to us as well. That's a pretty...
No, actually, let me tell you where I am. I'm at the Israeli embassy in Washington because today is the 7th anniversary of the death of my friend Itzhak Rabin. So I'm going in here to, this is not a political stop, I'm going to speak at a memorial service for him.
Obviously, you know the way better than the people who are driving, yeah.
No, it's just there are barriers here in the front, so I said it's okay to park on the street. That's what we should do.
Yeah, you're not getting a ticket.
That's right. They're not going to. You're the president. You know, they're not, what are they going to do? You know, it's interesting how you haven't been president for several years, but I'm sure if you attenuate any of the radio talk shows around the nation, you hear your name constantly brought up, even though there's a Republican administration. How much do you think, even today, on Election Day in 2002, Bill Clinton is part of how people are voting, good or bad?
Not very much, I don't think. I think most people judge these candidates on their own merits and the positions they take based on how they think they'll affect their lives. I may have some impact in getting out a lot of our voters. And it may be that some of them listen to me and the reasons I have for supporting the candidates I do better. But I don't think it has too much impact. Then, of course, Hillary and I have been demonized for years by the right-wing talk show hosts. And I suppose that maybe I helped motivate some of those that always hated me, but there's nothing I can do about that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting when they talk about what happened since September 11th, and if someone says, well, you know, the Bush administration was in office when that happened, you'll always hear people say, well, yes, but it was the Clinton administration that didn't take care of this problem when they could have. That's why it happened under their watch. You'll hear about the economy being bad under the Bush administration. They'll say, well, but the seeds of it were planted by the Clinton administration, and that's what it – I mean –
Well, first of all, both of those things are false. I mean, I worked very hard – to get Osama bin Laden, and when I did my exit interview with President Bush, I told him, I said, I know you think Iraq is our number one problem. I think Osama bin Laden and the Al-Qaeda network is, and we have thwarted a lot of their attacks. We've arrested a lot of terrorists. We've taken down a lot of their cells, but he's still a great danger, and I did everything I could to get him. Some of the people who are now criticizing me for not getting him are the very people when I bombed his training camp and took it out and tried to get him, acted like it was nothing real and that there was not a serious problem. So they just cut it flat around. And on the economy, I think the results speak for themselves. Obviously, the 10-year expansion couldn't go on forever, but or the 8-year expansion, but it was, I think it's been worse than it would have been if we'd been in there because our policies were better. Mm. However, you know, sooner or later, every administration has to take responsibility for itself. You didn't hear me every single day blaming former President Bush for everything that happened on my watch. I just didn't do that. I don't think that's a very fruitful way to proceed. It may be good politics for them because that's what they do. But, on the economy, I'll be glad to stand on my economic results. It's funny. For years and years, they said my economic policies would wreck the economy, and then it got better and better. Then they said they had nothing to do with a good economy. And now when theirs got bad, they said that, well, what I did had nothing to do with what was good about our economy. I caused what was bad about theirs. So, you know, they have a shifting explanation. I think what the American people want their public leaders to do is to take responsibility for the jobs they have and make it better. And that's what I tried to do. I didn't think the blame game was very productive.
Do you think that the country has become too polarized in recent months in terms of conservatives and liberals so that, I heard President Bush this morning, for example, saying, send me allies. You know, he was urging people to go out there and vote for the Republican Party or conservatives. Send me allies. And it seems to me that if you're the president of the United States, everybody's supposed to be your ally. I mean, the president's supposed to represent everybody, but it seems like this country is so cleft down the middle now. You're either conservative or you're liberal. You're not allowed to have a point of view that encompasses both. And if you're on one side or the other, you're supposed to hate the other side.
Well, you know, if you go back to my 92 campaign and the work I did with the Democratic Leadership Council, that's exactly what I was trying to bring it into. And I remember then they said I was a polarizing figure, because they attacked me for 9 years, and they got all their folks to hate me. So it, all of a sudden, it was supposed to be my fault that they decided to attack me. But when I talked to the Republicans about it in private, they said, well, you know, you're trying to bring people together, and we can't have that happen. We can only win when they're divided, and the only way we can get you is to attack you personally. Newt Gingrich used to tell me how bad he felt about it. He said, but it's the only way we can fight, otherwise you'll win.
Wait, Newt Gingrich
used to laugh about it.
Newt Gingrich used to tell President Clinton that he felt bad that he had to keep criticizing him, but that was how he stayed in business?
No, we had a great private relationship, and he just said, you know, all these very personal attacks on me, he felt bad about it. We now know that more than one reason he felt bad about it. But you know, it's just the way they do business. It's, if you look at, you know, there's five people on radio that have 3 hours of national time every day, and four of them are conservative Republicans, and one of them's Howard Stern. I can't figure out what his politics are.
I don't think politics enter into that program.
I think the main thing is we just have to keep trying to rise above that. Even when the partisan rhetoric was hot when I was in, every year we wound up reaching agreement on important things. The last year I was president, we had a big global debt relief initiative that was bipartisan. We passed the last bill I signed, the New Markets Initiative, I did with the Speaker of the House, Dennis Hastert. So there's a way for people to work together, but it requires the president can't be too vindictive or partisan. You have to take the arrows and then still keep your hand outstretched and keep looking for ways to come together. Mm. The disagreements over the issues, I think, are quite healthy. I mean, the Republican Party is the most conservative it's been in 80 years, probably. Whereas the Democratic Party is more moderate, it's been a long time, but they keep trying to change the frame of the debate. What we have to do is just say when we disagree, but try to keep the rhetoric down and not have personal animosity creep into it. I think that if there's going to be politics of personal attack, it ought to be coming from them, not us. That's what I tell our guys all the time. We can win on the issues, and that's what we ought to stick to.
Well, most of the criticism, I was talking to former President Clinton here on the Mitch Albom program, most of the criticism of the Democratic Party in recent months and going into this election is that they don't seem to have a clear-cut agenda. There seems to be a bit of a fear of criticizing the current president because of the patriotic fervor with which he received after September 11th. And so they're sort of bringing up the economy every now and then, but then dropping back down. A lot of the things that they criticized the president for, a lot of top Democratic people voted for in favor of some of the tax cuts and things like that, so they don't want to be hypocritical. Do you think your party, the Democratic Party, has done a good enough job going into this election to identifying what issues they stand for and try to drill those home?
Well, I think here's what I think. I think it is much harder to do in a midterm election when you don't have a president in the White House and when you don't have a presidential nominee and when the country is still sort of in the backdraft of the unity we all felt at September 11th. That is, what I wish that we had had a program on one piece of paper that said, we're all united in the fight against terror, but here are our differences. Here's where they are, here's where we are, here's what we'll do differently. But it became difficult to do because of the timing of the Iraq discussion, which basically blocked out 2 or 3 months right before the election. So at the end, Tom Daschle and Dick Gephardt tried to put out an alternative economic program, and a lot of our candidates were talking about it. But I think you'll see the situation clarify rather dramatically in the next few months as the presidential race takes shape and it becomes clear that we do have alternative and constructive ideas on the economy, on how to provide health care, on education, and on a whole range of other issues. I think the nature of the national campaigns is they tend to crystallize this. We did about as well as we could here, considering we were being outspent $150 million, and we didn't have just one voice to speak for us as we did for 8 years when I was there.
When September 11th happened, was the leadership part of Bill Clinton wishing that he was still in the White House?
Oh, I think anybody who's ever been president would be glad to serve in a terrible time like that just to try to help the country get through it. But what I mostly thought about was the burdens that the president would have to bear and the burden of the country and particularly the people in New York and how important it was that we unify. And I was glad that we got the support we did from around the world so we could go into Afghanistan and do the job right. It's because we then had basing rights, we had overflight rights, things we didn't have when I was there. We actively discussed a military operation in Afghanistan after the 1998 African embassy bombings, and we simply didn't have the logistical or political support to do it. And so I was glad that we could do it and very, very sad that we had to have that kind of loss before the rest of the world acknowledged what a terrible danger the Al-Qaeda is.
Anything differently that you would have done if you were president than President Bush ended up doing in the aftermath?
I don't think I should comment. I think that, you know, we've got enough to do on that, and we ought to try to stay together as much as possible. I think we ought to confine our differences to those things where we have real differences, the tactical matters that are not really important. I don't get to make the calls he does, and I hope he makes them all right.
Mm. What's next for you? I know you already ruled out the television talk show thing, but you're actually not bad on radio. You might want to consider,
you know,
fielding that.
I like some radio. One thing I like about radio better than TV in terms of daytime talk show is you can do the shows from anywhere. As you can see, your guests don't have to be in the studio.
Right.
And there's all kinds of people stuffing traffic all the time. So you can have a broader base.
Plus, you don't have to have makeup on.
That the people that are listening to us now, you know, there's still a couple hours before the polls close. It's amazing how many of these races are tight as a tick. And so if you haven't voted and you're listening to us, you ought to go vote. I hope you'll vote for the Democrats, but however you vote, you need to know these races are close. And the Senate and the House and all the national direction and education and the economy and health care are riding on these elections. That, even though if people can't tell the distinctions, I'm sorry, because there's never been bigger differences between the two parties. And so we're close in the polls and wide apart in philosophy. And I'd hate for anybody to feel disappointed tomorrow because he or she didn't vote. So I want to get that plug in.
Well, you did the plug very well. I think if you learn how to say this is Bill Clinton with the traffic,
yeah,
I think you're pretty much home free for hosting a radio program.
Sure.
Well, you know, you can do this because you've already written your book, which, by the way, Hillary and I love, but I've got a book to write. Now, when I finish the book, maybe I'll take this up. You can be a guest on my show. If I have a radio show, will you be a guest on my show?
Mr. President, I'd be happy to. Thank you for asking me. And thank
all right,
you,
man.
Thank you
care.
For coming on the program. We appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Former President Bill Clinton here on the Mitch Albom program.